Oh, those Dallas Mavericks, they will not lose. They just keep making Greg Urbano look smarter and smarter. Every day goes by and we have to hear about it. Or I have to hear about it. You just have to hear about it once a week. We welcome you to the CBSSports.com NBA podcast. Adam Azer, Greg Urbano. And we got a team that's won 13 games in a row, creeping up on the Lakers for first place in the Western Conference, just 2.5 games back. Still 6 games behind the Cavaliers in the loss column for the best record in the NBA. But we will talk about the Mavericks, and we have an action-packed Friday afternoon show for you. We're excited, Greg.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good weekend of basketball. I think, you know, the return of LeBron, everybody's happy for that. And some, you know, obviously this time of the year, teams are really starting to figure out, okay, you know, this is where we're going to be in the playoffs, and maybe now it's getting exciting because now we can look at who's going to play against whom and what sort of matchups are we going to get in the playoffs, and that's one of the big things we'll hit on later today.
Yeah, so here's what we're going to talk about. I want to look at the top four teams in the Western Conference. They're separated by 4.5 games, and with the Lakers kind of sputtering lately, it's opened up some room for Dallas, Denver, and Utah to gain some ground. Let's look at their schedules and see who has the easiest road as we have, you know, around 20 games left, even less than that for a lot of teams in this season. We'll look at that. We'll look at some scores that you might have missed, some important ones from the last week, the hot streaks, the cold streaks, and ideal playoff matchups. We're going to look at the Western Conference this week, the Eastern Conference next week. But what we're going to do is look at those top four teams and figure out which of the bottom four teams they would least likely or most likely want to play in the first round. Some actually pretty interesting stuff when you look at the matchups. And then we're going to have Greg Urbano's prediction of the week, or whatever you want to call it, the guarantee of the week, since you've been
Herb's
on a little
guarantee.
Bit of a hot streak.
Yes, Herb's guarantee of the week. I've hit 2 in a row. You know, last week, obviously.
Well, last week was the Mavericks.
2 weeks ago was the Mavericks. Last week was my prediction that I would beat you in ping pong again.
Okay.
And I did do that, you know, so that was a good guarantee as well. So 2 for 2 in the last guarantees. And then again, like you said, at the end of the show, we'll talk about my guarantee for the upcoming week.
This is somewhat of a funny story to give our listeners an idea of the amount of work that we accomplished throughout the week. We were about to go record the podcast. I went to get a glass of water and come back over to the podcast room. And as I was walking back, I made a right and went right into the ping pong room. And I said, oh, actually, we're going to do a podcast. We're not playing ping pong. But we do that.
Sometimes
you
just walk there based on habit. But fortunately for us, you know, there's more than ping pong in that room. So
it's like when you park your car in the same spot every day and then you park in a new spot the next day and you end up going to the old one.
Done that many times.
That's like me going to the ping pong room today. I'm so used to it. So the Dallas Mavericks, again, they've won 13 in a row. They're 45-21. The Lakers are 47-18, and they are obviously the hottest team in the NBA. What do you make of them in terms of their ability to win an NBA championship now? And not only that, but there is a lot of chatter now about their scoring margin. I've heard even their TV announcers talk about it recently. Their scoring margin is not as impressive as some of the other teams in the NBA, some of the other good teams. And for that reason, people think that they will fall back down to earth and they are not quite as good as their record or their streak. What do you think?
It's like my man Herm Edwards said, you play to win the game. And that's what they've done. They've
Hello?
Won games. Hello? You play to win the game. And that's what the Mavericks have done. And, of course, since making this trade, they lost the first game and they've won every game since then. So you say, are they championship contenders? I think absolutely. When you look at the conference that they're in, I believe they're the second best team in that conference. So you say to yourself, okay, if you look at the two best teams getting to the conference finals, does Dallas have a chance? Well, right now you figure it should go 6 or 7 games because these are two very well, you know, it's a good matchup with these two teams, especially now that Dallas has beefed up their front court with some bigs. Obviously, Brendan Haywood in will definitely help them battle against Pau Gasol and Andrew Bynum. However, at the same time, you know, you have to look at the other things that the Lakers have. So when you look at those two teams matching up in general, do you say Dallas has a chance? I think so. I think, you know, they pull off some wins that they shouldn't get within the actual the series, and they get some big games from their bench. They definitely have a shot. So to me, they're the second best team in the West, and I have them as the fourth best team overall in the league.
Well, I think it could very well come down to home court advantage and whether or not they can catch the Lakers, because the Lakers, who have lost 3 out of 4 right now, they're only 17-13 on the road. They're not a great road team. You compare that to Dallas, 22-12 on the road. Now, the Lakers are great at home. So whoever hosts Game 7, if they end up playing,
be real big.
That could be absolutely huge. However, I don't think it's a two-team race in the West. I think it's a four-team race in the West.
Yeah,
I really think all four of those teams could win that conference, the top four, yep. Lakers, Dallas, Denver, Utah.
Yeah, I know. I know you love Denver, and I think those four teams, like you said, clearly have set themselves apart from the rest. You know, I think in my mind that it goes L.A., Dallas. And then you look at Denver, Utah. It's very tough, you know, to look at who is the best of those teams. But one thing you have to like for both of those teams is they have great point guard play. And in the playoffs, point guards step up. If you look at last year's playoffs, the numbers that the point guards were putting up, you know, you're very heavily reliant on your point guard to really solidify your offense, keep the turnovers down. And, you know, you look at Chauncey Billups and Darren Williams, two of the best in the league. So, like you said, there's certainly four teams that can contend. And it's going to be a fun race to see. And like you said, you know, depending on which team matches up with the team that they're not that good against, we might have an upset early on in the first round.
For what it's worth, Denver has beaten the Jazz 3 out of 4 games this year. Greg, I know it's a little early in the podcast, but I want to get to our email because it has to do with the Dallas Mavericks. It comes from Carlos in San Diego. With Dallas going on a huge winning streak and the Nuggets losing Kenyon Martin, real quick, Kenyon Martin, still don't know when he's coming back. He's getting a little testy. He wants to get back in there. He's having his treatments. It's not going quite as well as they were hoping. So don't really know when Kenyon Martin's coming back, but they've been playing without him and still playing pretty well. So let me read the question again. With Dallas going on a huge winning streak and the Nuggets losing Kenyon Martin, do you believe that the Mavericks have become the second-best team in the West, if not the first, behind the struggling Lakers? If so, are you prepared to say that all the moves Mark Cuban has made over the past 3 years have paid off? And should we as fans be more patient with big-time trades before declaring them busts like the Kidd trade? So we already answered the first part of that question. We do believe that Dallas is the second-best team in the West right now. Should we be more patient with criticizing these trades? And do we think that everything now is validated that Mark Cuban has done?
Well, there's one champion a year. So, you know, teams will make trades that will improve their run and improve the makeup of their team, but they don't win a championship, so fans think, oh, it didn't work out. But in the end, did it improve their team standing in the way that they can set things up in the future? Absolutely. You know, if you look at Jason Kidd's play over the last year, a lot of people thought, wow, Devin Harris in last season was going to be a better player than Jason Kidd at some point. And then, you know, again, obviously he's playing on the Nets, so it's difficult for Devin Harris to be who he's supposed to be. But Jason Kidd has really revamped himself. And I read an article about him, and he basically said that water, H2O, has changed his entire life and his entire game. He says he just drinks more water throughout the day, feels more hydrated, feels like he has more energy. A lot in the lines of what we read about Steve Nash, who completely pushed sugar out of his diet. These guys are realizing that, you know, their body is what's going to get them through the ends of their careers, and they don't want to end their career in the way that a lot of these guys do when their numbers fall off. So, you know, Jason Kidd, we thought he's going to hit a wall at some point because of his age, but he hasn't done that. He's actually been even better. So, yeah, you know, when these trades are made, you might not get that instant success. And like I said, only one team can win the championship. So the fact that it's worked out over the long term, you could say that, yes, Cuban did the right thing. And, you know, the one thing that I can never fault an owner for doing is trying really hard to make his team better. And he did that. And he puts his money into his team, and that's all you can ask for. And if it doesn't turn out, at least you can say he tried and he wanted to make this team better.
But we, of course, thought that the Kidd trade was a disaster.
Yeah.
And I still don't know that they wouldn't be this good with Devin Harris instead of Jason Kidd. But to Jason Kidd's credit, he's become a great three-point shooter and sort of complements that team very well because they need that. They need that from Jason Kidd. And, yeah, I think you got to give Mark Cuban a lot of credit. He's got guts, and right now they're playing very well. But I think they are better than a lot of the other experts are giving them credit for because it's, you know, there are a number of people out there who are saying the Dallas Mavericks are overrated. I don't have a problem with a team that has a low scoring margin because they win because Dirk Nowitzki is one of the best clutch players in the league.
Yeah, winning close games is never a bad thing. It shows that you can eke out games. It shows that down the stretch you can play the type of basketball that you need to win these close games. And that is never a bad thing, and it only makes, you know, the playoff games, which are pretty much always close, it makes those more comfortable. Your players are used to being in those situations. They're used to running certain sets and shooting in clutch pressure situations. So I don't think it does anything but help them because they're winning the game. The win margin, the point margin doesn't matter the next day and 2 weeks from now. They won that game and it goes down as a win.
I agree. All right, I want to talk about those top four teams and their schedules because the Lakers have a pretty tough schedule and Dallas doesn't have it easy. But the Lakers, and specifically, I think the Nuggets have the two toughest schedules of those top four teams. And just to give you a quick overview, not going to get too into it. The Lakers, they're at Phoenix tonight. We record this on March 12th. They got three road games coming up, Phoenix, Golden State, and Sacramento. They should do okay there. But what worries me, March 24th through the 31st, they've got a five-game road trip. San Antonio, Oklahoma City, Houston, New Orleans, and Atlanta. They do play Denver again, they play Minnesota again, and they play the Clippers. It is to end the season, and those are road games. So for Los Angeles, they have 17 games left, 6 at home, 11 away. 9 of them, over half of them, are against teams that are above 500. Dallas, on the other hand, has 2 extra home games as opposed to road games, 9 home, 7 away. So for the Lakers, they have 5 more away games. The Mavericks have 2 more home games. They play the same amount of teams that are above 500. And I think right there, you've got to say there's an opportunity for the Mavericks to jump the Lakers.
Absolutely. The opportunity's there. You know, whether or not they're able to do that, you will probably be more reliant on the Lakers' play than Dallas. I do feel that Dallas will win at the sort of pace that they're at. They're obviously not going to win out the rest of the season. But the Lakers will have to drop multiple games or a few games in a row like they did just recently, which I don't see happening. When the Lakers go on a 3-game losing streak like they did recently, things start turning around. Phil Jackson steps it up a little bit. And what you saw early on in their most recent game is that Kobe is trying to allow the big men to get started in the game. Of course, he had to turn it on late in the game and put the scoring on in the fourth quarter. But overall, I don't think the Lakers will relinquish this spot, but it's certainly one that Dallas, if they take advantage of the schedule that you mentioned, they could pull even and have a shot at getting that home court advantage, which, like you said, is absolutely huge when you think of a Game 7 in L.A., with Jack sitting there front row in that stadium. You certainly don't want to be in Staples Center for a Game 7 as an opposing team.
Denver has 18 games remaining. 8 are at home, 10 are on the road. 13 of them are against teams that are better than 500 right now.
But they play better against the tough teams.
Yeah.
We talked about Denver often this year in that they play really well against the teams that they should play well against and then the teams that they should easily handle. They seem to go out there and just kind of take it easy. But, you know, a challenging schedule for them is probably one that'll help get them set for this playoff run. And if you look at where they're going to be at, you know, obviously the 3-4 seeds are up in the air. And, you know, definitely they want to end the season healthy. They want to get Kenny Martin back, but they definitely will enjoy playing these tough teams and getting used to that sort of play.
Yeah, they have a 5-game East Coast road trip from March 23rd through March 29th. That's the Knicks, the Celtics, the Raptors, the Magic, and the Mavericks. And that right there, 5 games, and of course Dallas not on the East Coast, but 4 of those 5 games are East Coast trips, and then the last of the 5-game road trip is Dallas. That is just bad timing to have to play one of the teams you're competing with for a playoff spot. Now, that stretch right there, those 5 games, makes me believe that the Denver Nuggets probably won't get the number one seed.
Yeah, so you said they got Orlando, then Dallas to end that trip.
Yeah,
wow.
Boston.
Are those back-to-back nights?
At Knicks, at the Celtics, at the Raptors, and then, back-to-back on the 28th and the 29th at Orlando and at Dallas.
That's
brutal. That stretch right there, where every game is so important right now, that stretch right there is probably going to prevent them from making up those 3.5 games on the Lakers. And then the Jazz, looking at their schedule, I think this is the easiest one. To give you an idea, they have 8 home games, 10 away games, and 9 games against teams that are over 500, but I don't know. Milwaukee tonight at Oklahoma City. They have Washington. They have Minnesota. They have Golden State twice. They actually have Washington twice. They have the Knicks. They have Indiana. So they do have tough games, but I think they have more easy games.
Yeah.
So don't be surprised if the Jazz and the Nuggets swap places.
Yeah.
That wouldn't shock me at all. Man, they're when we do these podcasts once a week, it's like there's so many things I want to talk about.
Info.
And I hope I'm not overwhelming people. I think everybody out there is like, yeah, this is good stuff. Yeah. I want to listen.
I think they appreciate it.
I want more.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, Thursday night, last night, the Bulls, man. What's going on with the Bulls?
You know,
they got humiliated last night.
It's a problem we talked about with them early in the season. You know, they established leads. They certainly are a team that early on, when you have a guy like Derrick Rose who starts quickly in basically any game, they tend to, for whatever reason, have a second half mental collapse out against Orlando. They simply just got run off the court. And if you look at the injury to Derrick Rose early in the game, obviously that does not help. But for the most part, they don't match up well with Orlando. I mean, this is just a team that not many teams do, but against Orlando, that's just the wrong team for them to play against. And Orlando was hot last night and, as you said, routed them 111-82.
But a bigger issue right now is that the Bulls are a game and a half out of the playoffs. You've got the 6, 7, and 8 seeds in the Eastern Conference all with the same exact winning percentage, and they are two games back of the five spot, Milwaukee. So it goes Milwaukee 5, Toronto 6, Charlotte 7, and Miami 8, but they're in a three-way tie there. Yep. The Bulls are a game and a half back of those three teams.
Yeah, we had talked about them a couple weeks ago and said they're a lock, and Charlotte might be the team to come out.
I can't believe what's happened.
So I guess Joakim Noah is really that important to that team.
And Luol Deng.
Yeah, certainly Deng. I mean, Deng's hurt all the time, so yeah. I feel like when he's injured, they're used to it. But
no Tyrus Thomas now. They're not as well equipped.
Yep. Yeah, no, they made those trades to open up cap space, so it wasn't like they were going to get better after the trade deadline.
Yeah, but we talked about that, and we thought they were winners because we thought that with Akeem Warwick and with the team that they already had, that they would be able to still stay in the playoffs, not really lose any ground. But not only have they faltered, they've given Charlotte Tyrus Thomas, and Charlotte has leapfrogged them, and Charlotte's won four games in a row, and it looked like they were dead in the water.
Maybe they'd like to get in the lottery. Who knows? Maybe that's the plan.
I mean, it would be better for them long term.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You never want to be an 8 seed or a 7 seed. And, you know, again, if your season is basically knowing that you're going to go into the playoffs and get swept, might as well go in that lottery and take your chances.
So the Magic win 111-82. Wasn't even close. 7 straight wins for Orlando. The night game on TNT, the Blazers were able to beat Golden State 110-105 on the road. How were they able to do that? They outscored the Warriors 27-9 in the fourth quarter. The Warriors scored 9 points in the fourth quarter. Brandon Roy had 41. Now, let me ask you this. Interesting thing that was talked about on the halftime show last night. Charles Barkley said that the Portland Trailblazers are inconsistent and will continue to be inconsistent until they get more interior scoring from their big men.
Certainly.
Because they're a jump shooting team.
Yep.
LaMarcus Aldridge was 4-14 last night. Marcus Camby was 1-7 with 17 rebounds. But he's been pretty bad offensively since coming over. What do you make of Portland?
Again, this is a team that the injuries to the big men early in the year, we knew that would change their defense. But like you said, they have never been an inside scoring team. LaMarcus Aldridge is a power forward who would rather play with his back to the defender, taking fadeaway jump shots, and really just staying out of the paint. He's not someone that will bring it right at you and dunk on you. He's not that sort of power forward. Brandon Roy is spectacular. Obviously, last night, 41 points. We know what he can do in the clutch moments of games. He's as good as it gets. But right now, they look like one of those teams that could be dangerous in the playoffs, but if you take advantage of their weaknesses, you could probably hand it to them. So, you know, this is someone that, again, Brandon Roy could be an MVP candidate any year that he stays healthy. What other pieces can they bring in? This is a team that really can turn things around quickly, bringing in one to two guys, because Brandon Roy is that good. But right now, this year, like you said, the big men, they're not going to provide that scoring punch for them. So unless they match up with the Lakers, doesn't look like they have a chance in the first round.
Aldridge is actually shooting almost 50% this year. It's not like he's having a bad year, but he's slumping a little bit lately. He has scored less than 20 points in 5 straight games. So, you know, it's not like Portland's playing poorly. In fact, most teams in the West are playing pretty well, but I think they could use, come playoff time, they could use a little bit more from LaMarcus Aldridge because they are, as Charles Barkley described them, a jump shooting team, which is usually not a good thing when you're playing great squads. Also last night, Thursday night, the Hawks snapped a 2-game losing streak with a 105-99 win over the Wizards. You really just have to keep an eye on Jamal Crawford's production because, you know, since the All-Star break, he hasn't really been great. Lately, he's turning it on, and last night he had 29 points and made 50% of his shots, and he is such an X factor for them. It's almost like Joe Johnson, Josh Smith, those guys are very consistent, and the one who makes them go from being a good team to a great team is Crawford.
Absolutely. You know, he's an absolute lock for sixth man of the year. And
you think
when you look at,
you know,
there's
what?
No other team that is reliant on that sixth man.
We don't talk about Lamar Odom in that discussion.
Yeah, well, certainly he's a great player. And if you put their talent next to one another, they're both very good players. But who is it that means more to the team's success? There's no doubt it's Jamal Crawford, head and shoulders above all six men. Because if Lamar Odom goes down, the Lakers are still very good. When Jamal Crawford is out,
is that the criteria you use to judge who the sixth man of the year should be?
For me, it's the most important to the team. Yeah.
Should it just be the guy who's had the best year?
No. I mean, there's always
that could still be Jamal Crawford. I think it is.
Yeah.
But I think Lamar Odom deserves to
be. I think the sixth man, your role is to really spark your team off the bench. That's your role. And now, obviously, Lamar Odom does that night to night.
Lamar Odom's not a spark plug, but he plays down the stretch. Yeah. He is an important contributor.
Yeah.
He puts Andrew Bynum on the bench. And, you know, when we start thinking about the Lakers and who they're going to match up against in the playoffs and who would be a good matchup for them and all that, I don't even think about them as having two great big men. because they have two great big men when one of them is on the floor.
Yeah.
But Andrew Bynum, I don't know how you can look at him and say he's a great big man. You know what he could be. Yeah. They should trade him.
He had a stretch where he had some good games. Now, it depends on what they can trade him for, certainly, because Powell's a serviceable center. He can play the center position. And obviously, you know, in the Western Conference, you'd prefer to have someone bigger like Bynum. But if they made a move, it would make sense because, you know, we've talked about all year the struggle they have when they're on the court together. There were a few games in the middle of the season where Andrew Bynum put up double-doubles with Powell on the floor, but it's a very rare occurrence.
And he's a great player when Powell is not playing. When Powell doesn't play, Andrew Bynum goes nuts. But Andrew Bynum, when I see the Lakers down the stretch, he's usually sitting on the bench. It's a point guard, whether it be Farmer or Fisher. It's Kobe, it's Artest, it's Odom, and it's Pau Gasol.
Yeah.
So I think they should trade him. Not obviously can't do it now, but I think they should look into it in the offseason. All right, some other scores from the week. Wednesday, Tyreek Evans records his first career triple-double in a 113-90 win over the Toronto Raptors. 19 points, 10 assists, 10 rebounds. Tuesday, Milwaukee gets a nice win over Boston, 86-84. Andrew Bogut had 25 points and 17 rebounds. And also on Tuesday, Kobe Bryant hits a game winner against the Raptors. The whole Kobe Bryant, is he clutch debate is getting so much pub now.
Yeah.
It's all over the place, and we're not going to beat a dead horse. But basically, from everything that we read this week and what we talked about last week, my conclusion is that he makes a lot of clutch shots, and he takes a lot of clutch shots. And you can skew the stats to make him look good or bad.
Very true.
You got to use your eyes and go with your gut when you talk about Kobe Bryant because it's just too controversial.
Well, the fact is, if you're a fan of the opposing team and he has that shot, your mind frame is this ball's going in. And that's the mark of someone that's so deadly. Yeah, when he has the ball in his hand, really. Come on, really? When my team is playing against the Kobe team, and it's a 1 or 2 point game, I'm like, oh man, you got to be kidding me! Kobe's going to hit this game winner. It's almost guaranteed.
When my team is playing, and maybe this is just the product of being a Knicks fan, but my team is playing and they have a 1 or 2 point lead, and anybody takes the last shot, I'm always thinking, oh, that ball is going to go in. I mean, you train yourself to think the worst. If he throws that ball up from three quarters court, you're like, oh no, we're going to lose on the greatest shot in NBA history. Yeah. Yeah, so that's just the way it is. But look, Kobe made a game winner on Wednesday. He missed the game-tying shot on Sunday against Orlando. So like I said, he takes a lot and he makes a lot. On Monday, we work backwards here, the Cavs beat the Spurs. The Cavs beat the Spurs without LeBron and Shaq. Great game for Mo Williams.
I believe Jameson was out.
No, Jameson played in that game.
Is he in that one?
He did. He scored, I think, 17 points in that game. And he had a minor injury, but he's okay. And Sunday, the Magic held off the Lakers in Orlando. We talked about that. Kobe Bryant missed the game-tying two-point jumper. And Matt Barnes really got into the heads of the Lakers. I thought Matt Barnes played like a thug.
Absolutely.
I hated it.
Oh, when he threw a pick on Derek Fisher.
Oh, toward the end, right?
Then he turned to look at him as if he was just going to fight him.
Yes.
And he should have been ejected on the spot.
That's what I was saying.
I believe Jeff Van Gundy said it also, that he should have been ejected. But no one else said it.
I was not listening. Mm-hmm. I was actually at the office watching the game. I didn't have the sound on.
Yeah.
And I was like, are you kidding me?
It was pure, like you said, thuggery to try to pick a fight. And this is a basketball game. You're playing basketball. You set a pick.
Derek Fisher is not. I mean, Derek Fisher is a classy guy.
Yeah.
He's a very well respected.
He's also
said
a lot of hard picks. He's come after some players in the years. He's a gritty player. There's no doubt about it. He's a gritty player, and yes, he's a classy guy. And he's certainly someone that you would look at as one of the nice guys of the game. But he plays tough basketball.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think the one thing that Barnes probably, I would think that he may have been told to do something like this, because the fact of the matter is that the Magic aren't a tough team. They're not a team that you look at and you say, wow, those guys are scary. They're scary talented. They're not intimidating enough for most teams. So at least,
what, Marcin Gortat doesn't intimidate him?
No, and Dwight Howard should, but he's too nice. He smiles.
Yeah,
you know, when he knocks you down, he picks you up.
Smiles,
you knock someone down, you look at him, you know? So overall, they needed that toughness, and I think he was probably instructed to try to get into heads of those guys, and it worked. You heard and read some of the quotes from the Lakers at the end of the game, and they definitely took notice. And this is probably the first time all year that I've thought, wow, this would be a good finals matchup other than Lakers-Cavs. I've wanted all year to see Lakers-Cavs, but man, Lakers-Magic would be exciting because of things like this. So, no, you don't like to see a fight almost start, or you don't like to see Barnes play like a thug, but it's nice to see the heat and the contention, and really a playoff atmosphere in a regular season game.
The Magic are playing great. We're going to talk about them more next week when we look closer at the Eastern Conference. But here are the streaks. 7 straight wins for the Magic, 4 straight for Milwaukee, 4 straight for Charlotte. The Bobcats, if you look at their schedule, they have a lot of very winnable home games left on their schedule, and just a great shot for the playoffs, especially with Chicago falling off. And the Bulls are arguably the coldest team in the NBA. They've lost six straight, and they are very injured. Washington has lost five straight. And worth mentioning, the Nets were able to pick up a couple of recent wins. They now have seven wins. Good job, nice, Nets. Nice. They need two more with 18 games remaining to avoid the worst season ever. Nine wins would tie them.
They'll get double digits. I think so.
Well, they don't play – I don't think they play the Knicks or the Bobcats anymore.
Unfortunately.
And those are the teams that that they've beaten twice this year.
Well, the other thing I would want to point out from the Eastern Conference, and this is some of the emails we got earlier in the year from our Australian fans who were asking about Andrew Bogut and will he be an all-star in the future.
Right.
The fact is he should have been an all-star this year.
Oh, yeah.
And he's proven after the all-star break that he's even better than we thought going into that when we thought he was snubbed from an all-star game spot. So overall, Andrew Bogut has stepped his game up, proven that he's one of the best big men in the East, maybe the second best big man behind Dwight Howard. And right now, they look really good. They're playing very good basketball, and I think it's definitely, you know, in part to Andrew Bogut. Brandon Jennings playing, doing what he's supposed to be doing throughout the year, but Bogut's been even better than we expected.
And luckily for the Nets, they do play Charlotte again. They've beaten the Bobcats twice this year. So, yeah, they need two more.
Do they play Boston?
The Nets, that's a good question. They do not play Boston.
Yeah,
I mean, that's an easy win for them, right?
Yeah, these days. Yeah.
Let's go out west for the streaks there. The Mavericks have won 13 in a row. You know that. And what's interesting about the West, if you if you look there.
Yeah, I just see that.
Every team in the top 10, the top 10 teams in the Western Conference won their previous game. So they all have a W next to their names when you look at their streaks. The top nine are all 500 or better in their last 10 games. Four in a row for Denver, four in a row for Utah, three in a row for Oklahoma City. Really, of the elite teams, the Lakers are the coldest. They're 5-5 of their last 10 games. They just snapped a three-game losing streak. Golden State has lost six in a row, and Minnesota has lost seven in a row. Greg, are you ready to talk about the ideal playoff matchups
for the
top four teams? Okay.
Let's get to it.
So we took those top four in the Western Conference. Lakers won. Mavericks 2, Denver 3, Utah 4, and we said, who would they like to match up against in that bottom four of the Western Conference?
We go 4-3-1 here?
Sure, we can do that. Let me just give the standings real quick after Utah. Oklahoma City is 5, Phoenix is 6. They are both 2.5 games behind the Jazz. So it goes Oklahoma City 5, Phoenix 6, San Antonio a game and a half back of Phoenix at the 7 spot, and just a half game behind them is Portland holding on to the 8 seed with Memphis 4 games out of the playoffs. So we do believe those will be the 8. L.A., Dallas, Denver, Utah, Oklahoma City, Phoenix, San Antonio, Portland. Yeah, so for Utah, kick it off.
Utah Jazz, as crazy as it might sound, the Jazz absolutely do not want to see the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Jazz right now are combined 10-0 against the Suns, Spurs, and Blazers. So 10-0 against the other three teams of that four, 0-2 against the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Do you really think that, though, in the playoffs, they would rather play one of those three experienced teams than the Oklahoma City Thunder?
No.
No, you
think? No, I would think they would prefer to play, certainly. I would think they would prefer to play the Suns, and I would think they would prefer to play Portland. San Antonio is one of those teams that with so much playoff experience, you really just don't want to go up against. And if Tony Parker's healthy, I feel like San Antonio could definitely get to beyond the second round.
But listen,
I don't think.
As we do this little exercise here, part of me is thinking that the answer to the question, who would they most likely want to play, is always going to be Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City might be, despite the fact that they're the fifth seed right now, might be the easiest team to play because they
are... No experience.
Exactly. No experience on that team. But for argument's sake.
Yep. Basically when we broke down what we saw this season.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, we look at on paper, you look at Andre Kirilenko and you think he'd be the perfect player to defend Kevin Durant. Long, he's fast, he can run with Durant, but that's not been the case by any means. Durant's averaged 29.5, 6.5 rebounds, and 6.5 assists. So he's got a stat line of about 29, 6, and 6 in the games that they've played. And basically he's shooting about 52%. So he's not really, you know, at that, you know, with the things that he's doing them efficiently.
Till you hear how good he is against the Dallas Mavericks.
Ah, very nice. So we also, for me, I think the most intriguing matchup when you look at Utah and you look at Oklahoma City going against each other is that point guard matchup. And the two times they played this year, they've been nearly identical, and that's Deron Williams. And, of course, we're looking at Russell Westbrook. If you look at Deron Williams, he's averaged 12 points, 4 boards, and only 6 assists. very low numbers for him. So you have to figure, why is that? And then you look at Westbrook, who's averaging 12.5 points, 3.5 rebounds, 6.5 assists. Basically the same numbers. Williams shot slightly over 39% compared to Westbrook's 32. But if the difference in that matchup is only shooting percentage, the Thunder should win the game. I mean, that's really, Deron Williams should be dominating that point guard matchup and dominating the games for them. But lastly, the Thunder's, the biggest weakness for them is their interior defense and a lack of a shot-blocking center. But the Jazz don't attack like that. The Jazz have centers that like to roam the three-point line and will rarely dominate the game in the paint. So the Thunder can use their athleticism to guard these guys instead of going with size, which they don't have.
Right, okay. Well, that would be the Utah Jazz. Worst-case scenario, we don't want to play Oklahoma City, and like Greg told you, they are 10-0 against Phoenix, San Antonio, and Portland. How about Denver?
For Denver, I would think of the four teams below them, they don't want to see Steve Nash and the Suns. And if you look, that's the team they would currently be playing. But the Suns' second unit can score in bunches, and the Nuggets usually rely on an advantage in bench scoring.
And it's interesting because Utah would be playing Oklahoma City if the playoffs started today.
Yeah, so right now this is what they do not want.
Flip-flop, guys.
Yep. But, you know, I look at the Suns' bench and the fact that they can score, and that's the advantage Denver usually has, is that they outscore opposing teams' benches. Now, J.R. Smith is the best player to come off the bench in this matchup, but the Suns have the next three best players in Channing Frye, Dudley, and Dragic. Those are the three players. If you look at the benches of both two teams, you rank the benches, you got J.R. Smith, and now put those guys 2, 3, 4. And at the same time, if you look at, obviously, we've mentioned Kenyon Martin. If Kenyon Martin's not playing in the playoffs, Amari Stoudemire is just going to absolutely tear them up, which he's done for the most part this season. And if you look at the matchups that they played, in the most recent game in Phoenix, the Suns outscored the Nuggets 33-11 in the second quarter. And that's when the bench normally plays a large chunk of minutes. That's when you see most of the bench players in. And then in the game, the second time they played this season in Denver, the Suns outscored Denver 32-27 in the second quarter. So the Suns put up a lot of points in the second quarter, which means their bench is playing well offensively. And again, Denver usually relies on their bench to make up points when they're losing or to add points to their lead. So right there, I would say that's why they probably don't want to see the Suns. And in both games, the Suns, again, they scored more second quarter points than first, which is obviously something that you look at the Suns, they usually get the hot starts.
Plus, the Suns can play their style. The Suns can play Denver style. The Suns can run up and down the floor. I mean, that's really the Suns' style. Denver plays pretty up-tempo as well. But, yeah, the Suns, yeah, they would be an interesting matchup. Which team would the Nuggets most like to play?
Well, if you look at the records against the teams, the one that stands out for the Nuggets is 3-1 against the Utah Jazz. And the thing I look at there is, again, the point guard matchup.
What about the first round? What about the first round?
The
Thunder. They are 2-1 against the Thunder, 2-1 against the Spurs, and 2-1 against the Blazers. So we could say there's no huge edge.
Yeah, probably the one team I would say that matches up pretty well with them is the Blazers. You know, when you look at the makeup of the team, you like that. And then obviously the Spurs, like I said, are the most dangerous of those four teams if you can get a healthy Tony Parker.
Okay, so the Nuggets want to play. The Nuggets don't want to play the Suns, and the Jazz don't want to play the Thunder, and that would currently be the first-round matchup. How about the Dallas Mavericks? I took a look at the Mavericks. This is very interesting. Coming into this is an obvious one, who they don't want to play in the first round. Coming into the season, they had beaten the Portland Trail Blazers 11 straight times in Dallas. This year they're 0-2 at home against the Portland Trail Blazers. One of those games, Andre Miller scored 52 points in an overtime win. They do have two more games coming this year against the Blazers. They will be in Portland. Now that they have Haywood, though, kind of changes things because they can put him on Aldridge. You don't really have to worry too much about guarding Camby or Juwan Howard, so you don't have to worry about a mismatch of Dirk trying to guard Aldridge. But I do think it's important to note that Portland has beaten Dallas twice on Dallas's home court. So that would be the team they least want to see. They are 2-1 this year against the Suns. I just can't see them losing to the Suns. They're 2-1 this year against Oklahoma City with one more game to come. And remember, you said Durant tore up who, Utah?
Yeah, definitely tore up Utah this year. And I know that last time Dallas lost was to Oklahoma City.
But this is interesting. Yeah. Durant has been terrible against the Mavericks this year. He's had a couple games where he's had a good point output, but he is shooting 19 of 64, less than 30% in those three games. The Mavericks are also 2-1 against the Spurs. So it's easy for them. They do not want to play Portland. And I think they would handle Oklahoma City pretty well. If I were Dallas, personally, I think if I were a Dallas fan, I guess I'd be rooting for them to play Oklahoma City. And the Los Angeles Lakers. We talked about this maybe last week or the week before. I think that they wouldn't want to see Portland because they have a history of not being able to beat Portland on the road, and they are not a great road team. I don't know. It's hard for me to say which team they would or wouldn't want. I think the Lakers, to be honest, I still think they're the best team out west, and I think that they can beat any of those four teams. I don't see them having a huge problem in the first round.
I think San Antonio is the only team because of their experience.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Tim Duncan.
I just don't think so.
The only team I would say of those four has a shot at winning more than two games in that series.
Although, they will struggle terribly to guard Manu Ginobili unless they put Ron Artest on Manu Ginobili. And
Which is a speed mismatch. I mean, obviously, Ron Artest is much stronger, but the way you beat Artest is to run off picks and literally just beat him towards the lane to where he's trailing you. And Ginobili would be doing that all day, running off picks and hitting jumpers.
I think it would be a good matchup if they played Phoenix. They've blown them out twice this year at home. So I can't imagine them losing a seven-game series to Phoenix when they have home court advantage.
No, there's no Rajah Bell there anymore. There's no toughness against Kobe on that Phoenix roster. They would pretty much run through them.
So we've established this, and this is pretty funny. The Lakers don't want to play Portland. Right now they would play Portland. The Mavericks don't want to play Portland. Well, they'll get lucky and they'd play San Antonio if it stood right as it stands right now. Denver doesn't want to play Phoenix, and they would. And Utah doesn't want to play Oklahoma City. And they would. So there you go.
And actually, of those matchups, I would really like to see Utah-Oklahoma City in the playoffs. Those would be really, really fun games.
I would love to see all of them, but I think Denver-Phoenix is the one I would circle.
Denver-Phoenix. See, again, I really like the Oklahoma City youth and the way that they play, so that would be the one.
Yeah, but Utah doesn't fire me up. I don't get fired up to watch Utah.
I get fired up to watch Darren Williams only, and that's it.
Yeah, Utah bores me.
Yeah.
They're yawners. Now we got to do our power rankings. Here's what Dave DelGrande had to say. Cavs 1, Lakers 2, Magic 3, Nuggets 4, Mavericks 5. Interesting.
Yeah.
Jazz 6. He ranks the entire NBA. You can see that online, cbssports.com/NBA/power rankings. We usually give our top 5, but I'm going to at least give my top 6 because I think there are 6 elite teams in the NBA. The same 6 that Dave DelGrande said. My guess is the same exact 6 as you.
Yep.
My order, though, Cleveland 1, Lakers 2. I got to give them love. The Mavericks 3, Denver 4, Orlando 5. Very tough to choose between Denver and Orlando, and then Utah 6. What do you think?
And this is strange because I obviously have been on Dallas since they made the trade. I've said they're the second-best team in the West. I've had them at number 2 in my power rankings, but the Orlando Magic is
playing great basketball.
And not only that, Dwight Howard to me is an MVP candidate who no one talks about just because he's a big man. And
Same with Dirk.
And like you said, he doesn't hit those shots at the end of the game, but he puts his team in position to win, and he plays the best defense in the league by far. So if you look at those factors, he's the best player on one end of the floor. Offensively, he's also very, very good, and he allows the other players to work off of him. They surround him. They work out at the three-point line because of him. So he might not put up 20-25 points per night, but he contributes so much to that offense just by standing there and, you know, really just getting the attention from the defense. So for me, I had to put Orlando ahead of Dallas. So for me, it goes Cleveland, then the Lakers. Number 3, I have Orlando. Number 4, I have Dallas. Number 5, Denver. And 6, Utah, just right behind Denver. Those two teams, obviously, very similar. Both like to run, and I would like to see – really, I'd like to see a head-to-head with those two teams and kind of see who is the better right now.
Yeah.
And I think the injury to Kenny Martin, you'd probably see Utah win that game, but right now I'd like to see them play.
Tell us about the awards page.
The awards page, obviously the awards watch on cbssports.com/NBA. Check it out in the What's Hot section. You will see the first of the links without a photo is the link to the awards watch on that page.
All that'll make sense to you when you're on the website.
I hope so.
It will.
And what you'll see on the awards watch page is obviously every single award laid out. You can vote on who you believe will win, and then you can also read thoughts on, of course, what we think here at CBS on who will win. If you look at it Monday, you're going to see my picks for the awards, and of course our podcast will also be housed in that area. But for the most part, like I say, get on the message boards, vote, let us know who you think will win, and then we'll look at the end of the year who actually won versus who the fans thought should win.
Mm-hmm. All right, I got 2 things for you, and I want a yes or no answer.
All right.
Actually, I want you to answer in 5 words or less. Ready? Ken Berger reports that Eddie Jordan is likely on his way out in Philadelphia. Do you think Larry Brown is coming back?
I certainly hope not.
Okay, that was good. The Nets broke ground on a new arena in Brooklyn. It's still a few years away. They're going to play the next two in Newark. Is this exciting or what?
Not in the least. I think the only excitement that
no, that's too many words.
I said not in the least.
Okay.
But I'd like to add to it in that the only way there could be any excitement in New Jersey basketball is LeBron James signing in New Jersey. But aside from that happening, it's not going to – I mean, obviously Brooklyn's going to be nice, and when they first open the stadium, there's going to be a lot of energy in there. But they have to have players, and they have to have a good team there for actual energy and excitement to happen.
All right, in 400 words or less, give me this week's Urbano Guarantee.
The Urbano Guarantee of the week. I'm looking at the Chicago Bulls, and I would love to guarantee them winning a game, but I can't.
Not like, this week.
Like I did for Dallas, I guaranteed them winning and pushing themselves into the second spot. I'm going to guarantee that Chicago continues to lose. Currently, they've lost six straight.
Mm-hmm.
Their next four, they're going to lose as well. At Miami, at Memphis, at Dallas, and versus Cleveland. I guess I'm not really going out on too far of a limb here to say that they're going to lose those four games, especially with an injury to Derrick Rose. But looking at something to guarantee this week, I'm going to guarantee that Chicago's win streak ends at 10, though. They're going to win next Saturday.
Their losing streak ends at 10.
I'm sorry. Their losing streak will end at 10. They're going to win next Saturday at Philadelphia.
This is a brutal stretch as I look at their schedule.
It's real tough.
It started, the six-game losing streak started with a loss at Indiana. Okay, that's bad. But their next five games were Atlanta, Memphis, Dallas, Utah, and then at Orlando.
Those are all playoff teams except for Memphis, who's a 9 seed out west.
Yeah, exactly. And Memphis has won like 8 straight on the road.
Yeah.
And then after that six-game losing streak, you got the Heat, the Memphis on the road, and Dallas on the road, and then you come home and play Cleveland. Yeah. I mean, that is 10 really tough games right there.
Yeah.
So 9 really tough games, and then the loss to Indiana to start it all off. I mean, the Bulls, they stink right now. But
it's a bad time to be injured, and they are injured right now. Yeah.
Greg, that's it for this week's podcast.
Sure.
Thanks, my man.
Thank you.
Big weekend plans?
You know what? If the weather holds up, and I think it will, it's spring break, and we live in Fort Lauderdale.
Oh.
So I'm thinking there
You're
might be.
You're too old for that, man.
No, you
can
never be too old for spring break, especially when you live in Fort Lauderdale.
You're
so.
Wearing a Rolling Stones t-shirt. The people that out on spring break, they're not even going to know who that is.
No, well, that's fine. They'll ask me the question, who is that?
Oh.
You know, the 19-year-old sorority girl. And I will inform her on who the Rolling Stones are, and then I'll let her listen to some music with me.
Okay.
Yeah, so it all works out.
Sounds like a very good weekend, and you have my phone number, so let me know when you're going out.
No doubt.
And I'll meet up. That's Greg Urbano. I'm Adam Azer. Thank you all for listening. Send us an email at cbsipodcastfeedback@cbs.com. CBSI, the letter I. And the reason why I say that is because I've gotten emails that are like, is this the word I? Because, you know, we have the I
E-Y-E.
Logo.
Absolutely.
Yeah. cbsipodcastfeedback@cbs.com. Have a great weekend. Enjoy spring break. And
Absolutely.
Find Greg Urbano if you're in the Fort Lauderdale area.
I'll be on the beach.
All right. Later, everyone.